Retired social worker and paraeducator, and I was union and all of those jobs. Came from a union family. I'm an IWW member. I'm very proud of that. Excited about learning more, and I like the fellowship in it.
And I'm Marilyn, and I am a retired mental health counselor. Been a wobbly for a long time, and I go by she, they. So for those of you that have never heard of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, or Wobblies as they're affectionately known, here's part of our preamble, and it kind of lets you know who we are. The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. Between these two classes, a struggle must go on until the workers of the world organize as a class, take possession of the means of production, abolish the wage system, and live in harmony with the earth. And that last part is very important with climate change upon us. These conditions can be changed in the interest of the working class upheld only by an organization formed in such a way that all its members in any one industry or in all industries, if necessary, cease work whenever a strike or lockout is on in any department thereof, thus making an injury to one an injury to all. And now we're going to go into a song, and you might know this song, you can sing along. It's Hold the Fort.
We meet today in freedom's cause and raise our voices high. We'll join our hands in union strong to battle or to die. Hold the fort, for we are coming, union folks, be strong. Side by side, we battle onward, victory will come. Look, my comrades, see the union banners waving high. Reinforcements now appearing, victory is nigh. Hold the fort, for we are coming, union folks, be strong. Side by side, we battle onward, victory will come. See our numbers still increasing, hear the bugle blow. By our union, we shall triumph over every foe. Hold the fort, for we are coming, union folks, be strong. Side by side, we battle honor, victory will come.
I'm running out of voice.
Fierce and long, the battle rages, but we will not fear. Help will come whenever it's needed. Cheer, my comrades, cheer. Hold the fort, for we are coming, union folks, be strong. Side by side, we battle onward, victory will come.
Okay, so now we're going to go into labor news, and Gordon, I'm wondering if you can start us off with that.
Sure. There's a lot of things going on in general labor news around the country and around the world, and I'm looking forward to call up my notes. One of the main things that's going on, well, one of the big stories going on in the country that I personally had a hard time finding out about was U.S. West Coast port workers shut some terminals in showdown over pay. And this is an article that I picked up on the Portside site. Portside is news for people on the left, and they have a sub-report called Portside Labor. And they aggregate some reports from other publications or do original work. And this one is by a guy named Greg Miller out of a publication called Freight Waves. And what's happened is that the International Longshore and Warehouse Union down in Local 13, down there in the Bay Area, they went out over issues of safety, issues of pay, issues of, you know, the same issues that most people are fighting for today. And so Local 13 down there, which is a pretty radical local, went out And so did, I believe, Long Beach. And then it spread up the coast to Tacoma and Seattle. And I took 3 or 4 days to try to find an actual report. I didn't even know which union they were talking about. I guessed it was ILWU. And I turned out to be all right. And what's happened is that another consortium of owners, these are the port owners, just decided to thumb their nose at the union's demands. And so they went out. And this has affected ports up and down the West Coast. Even Port Hueneme, I don't know how to pronounce that, in California. Oakland, Tacoma, Seattle, and Hueneme. Negotiations between the union and the consortium have broken down. So they decided to go out a full day, and with that threat hanging over the heads of the owners, they're going to use a little bit of leverage and to get their demands. This has been going on for a while, and the ILWU is not a union I would mess with. And just this connects directly to another story, which is about the UPS workers. UPS Teamsters start strike. This is from Labor Notes, another really worthy organization and website. If you want labor news, go to Labor Notes, and they also give you tips on organizing. And what's happened is that UPS is threatening not to listen to the union, and that's the Teamsters. So here's two major unions that deal with infrastructure and transportation. When they're talking about prices going up, when they're talking about gas going over $4 a gallon again, when they talk about supply chain disruptions, they're going to try to blame it on the union. I'm telling you that the owners and the shippers have made record profits during the COVID pandemic. The workers need a cut of that usurious profit that the owners got. And that's why 350,000 Teamsters might go out pretty soon. An authorization vote is starting this week, okay, which meant last week. But anyway, on a union that size, it takes quite a while to honestly collect and tally the votes without violating a Department of Labor laws and staying on the right side of the law. In this case, IWW doesn't always agree with that tactic, but we go along if we have a contract. So that's my two stories about what's going on. There are other things that are going on. There's an ongoing Writers Guild strike. I think it's still going on. And that people scoff at that. Well, all they do is write for TV. Well, guess what? They deserve to earn a living too. They deserve to earn. The big issue in that labor dispute is residuals. Because now they're figuring out all these streaming platforms and they're eliding or going around giving the employees a fair cut. So the writers are saying, hey, look, if you're going to syndicate this and put it out in podcasts and stream it, we want a cut of that. You know, so it's a totally legitimate strike.
And I heard that the actors are in solidarity with the writers.
Yes. I don't know, judging by U.S. labor law, if they could actually go out on strike. Screen Actors Guild, you're talking, mm-hmm. right? SAG?
Yeah.
SAG and AFTRA, right? It's for radio, TV actors. It's a dicey thing. They can't go out on a sympathy strike because it violates the Taft-Hartley Act. But they can be in sympathy and solidarity with the writers, which gives any union a boost in morale.
Right.
And also, you know, just financial support. The union could, you know, the Screen Actors Guild could vote to, you know, contribute to their strike fund or contribute to their home relief fund, you know, for kids that need food in lieu of the wages, right? So lots of actions fellow unionists can take. I know our outfit, the IWW, has done frequent solidarity action, marching with other unions on their picket line. We don't have to usually wear in wobbly swag and carry in some wobbly signage, but also carry in the striking union signage. And we've done this with farm workers, and we've done this with communications workers and SEIU. It's a perfectly legitimate thing. And from my experience, I've never been kicked off another union's picket line. Never. They might be a little bit tense. So who are you? What are you here for? I'm here to walk a picket line with you guys and gals. And generally speaking, they're very happy for the solidarity.
Sure. Especially if it comes with pizzas.
Ah, there you go.
I was just thinking of one small detail about writers. Like you said earlier, how some people think, you know, what's the big deal? Mm. But like, I love Colbert. He would be nowhere or nothing if it weren't for his writers. He doesn't come up with all that stuff.
Right.
And same with every other comic. I mean, that's just one tiny sliver of it. But their credit is due to the writers.
Mm-hmm. And it's a team. It's a team gig. You know, you got the guys and gals running the cameras. You know, you got the electricians. You got the people who just drive you around. They're all part of that team. And if it doesn't function smoothly, you don't get a good entertainment experience. And that's pretty important.
Well, we'll have to watch that and see how that's going.
Right.
Now, we have a little section we call the round table. And that's about the Supreme Court decision on the Glacier Northwest about striking. Glacier Northwest, is that the name of the cement company?
Yeah. They were out of Seattle.
Right. And sadly, we all know our Supreme Court now is hugely in favor of big corporate businesses and anti the working person.
Yep.
And they just came out with a decision about a week and a half ago stating that Glacier Northwest workers need to reimburse their employers for any damage that happened to the concrete machines or any loss of income. That's the kicker. Now, of course, when a person is forced to go into a strike, because nothing else and bargaining and all the other tactics have not worked with their employer for fair wages and fair living conditions, what's left is the strike. And yes, strikes can be economically uncomfortable.
That's the whole point.
Yes, economically uncomfortable for the owners of the corporations.
Yep.
And as Gordon said, that's the whole point, because some of these corporations only listen to their wallets. And so now they have basically hamstrung workers everywhere who are fighting for decent working conditions and fair wages. And I'm really sad that anything goes before the Supreme Court these days.
Right. You can almost guarantee that it's going to go back, you know, several decades. But the concern here was, in the greater labor movement, was that, okay, these workers went on strike. And they walked off the job, which is what a strike is. And we know when we walk off the job and refuse our labor to the employer, it's going to hurt them. That's how we can get what we need. But what happened here is that the workers walked off the job with ready-mix concrete still in the rotating drums. And you've seen them going down the highway, and they got to keep rotating until they get to the job site. And even when they're pouring, sometimes they're rotating, right? And that's to keep the concrete from setting up in the drum, because it ruins it. They have to chip it out or get a whole new drum or however they have to deal with it. But that's thousands and thousands of dollars, any of these big trucks. So what the Supreme Court decided was that was a step beyond, you know, denying the employer the labor. This was similar to sabotage. They didn't use the S word, but that's what they were talking about. And so they held the union liable for the damage done to the equipment. Very narrow decision, but the implications to me are still pretty horrendous.
And what are the implications?
Well, the implications is that the Supreme Court could rule against other workers. For instance, you know, the implications are, okay, if I'm in the flower fields up in Mount Vernon and I walk off the job, those flowers are going to die and wither and die. And that's the profit for the companies up there. So are we going to be held liable? And this was only if you lose the strike, by the way. So it's like double trouble. You lose the strike, you don't get what you argued for, and you got to pay damages to the company. So imagine, this does set precedent. I heard a Teamster argue that it didn't. The president of the Teamsters Union was saying, no, that's a very narrow decision. You know.
Oh, he wishes.
Well, I just thought that he was mistaken in his analysis of the situation. He wasn't looking at
it. I listened to him, too, and I was thinking, yeah, he hopes, he wishes.
You
let the camel's nose in under the tent and wait and see what happens.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, because the implication is that any result of physical harm or, you know, if I'm not mining gold, well, that's just no gold that's coming out of the mine. But if I'm not picking flowers, those flowers can wither and die.
Right.
So they're, you know, they're perishable products. So that, to me, came to mind right away. And I was thinking, well, geez, they could use this against
bakeries.
Lots. Yes. Anything. Like the milk delivery. Whatever. And that's the bad precedent in my mind. In days before, strikes were a lot more complete. They weren't as regulated. And sometimes they could do real damage to a company. But that was it. That was still covered under labor law. Now the interpretations, especially the most recent decision, it has serious implications for the future, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Do you think that settlement will, the penalty will break that union?
I don't think so. That's also Teamsters. Teamsters got deep bank account. But the point being, fellow worker Lynn, is that this opens the door, just a crack.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hear that.
And
yes.
To me, it's got bad implications.
Yes, no, I see your point for sure.
On the other hand, I was surprised to hear that the Supreme Court struck down a gerrymandering bill.
Yes.
In favor of fair access to voting and fair representation. I forget which southern state it was in.
Alabama,
yeah. Which surprised the hell out of me because I have no faith in the Supreme Court.
Right.
So
right.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day. Yeah.
That's true. And I was a bit surprised too, especially with, well, maybe Roberts. Roberts is he's the Chief Justice, but he's the only what's remaining of a swing vote on that court. You know, he can throw the vote either way. But Kavanaugh, I was very surprised that Justice Kavanaugh came over on the side of, and this is just restoration of the rights under the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which they gutted.
Yeah.
So it's pretty surprising. It doesn't seem consistent, but I guess they don't have to be. Yeah, so hopefully, you know, unions who look to do this kind of stuff in the future, if they'd have made the deliveries, arguably, if they would have made the deliveries and got the concrete out of the trucks and then we went back to the barn and parked them, then they wouldn't be in a jam. But that's kind of, that's doing a full day's work and then coming back and taking care of the boss.
Yeah.
So I think their actions were justified, but apparently the Supreme Court doesn't.
So what we were talking about a little while ago when people first got here is the fact that the IWW, Industrial Workers of the World, are a democratic union, meaning that all people have, as long as they're not employers or police, have the right to join as workers to the IWW. Now, it is a given that we don't encourage or endorse personal violations against other human beings at all. Go ahead, Gordon.
I'd like to address that because this has come up in several different times over the years, you know, in several different places. But the IWW has what we call a safer spaces policy. And we're one of the few unions to actually have that policy in place and employ it. Maybe the wrong word. We use it to take care of internal problems. For instance, homophobia, transphobia, misogynistic behavior, body shaming behavior, anything, you know, mocking the disabled or anything. We want to guarantee that all of our members, as fellow worker Marilyn was saying, we're a union for all workers. That means all workers. We don't care what race you are. We don't care what gender you are. But if you're going to join the IWW, you should be assured that you're not going to be attacked at meetings. You're not going to be humiliated. You're not going to be made to feel cast out because we have this policy in place and we have procedures and complaint procedures that, you know, if you feel that you've been disrespected at a meeting or in any kind of IWW and really outside of the IWW also, you know, because I have a lot of personal friends who are also wobblies, but I also know some wobblies who are not my personal friends. Everybody has a right to feel safe. And if you don't, if you feel violated, we have a procedure with which you can complain and get this matter resolved. We have what's called a gender equity committee. And I don't know if any of the other unions do or not, but I kind of doubt it. Or if they do, it's, you know, kind of not emphasized. Well, we emphasize it. And we try to mention it at least before every meeting that we do have a safer spaces policy. And it's in the manual of policy and procedure, but you can get it from your branch secretary. It's a method to not do any harm and not have to take any harm.
So the phenomenon that comes up from time to time, and not just in the IWW, but in quite a few different progressive groups and movements, is the issue of when somebody is accused of some verbal wrongdoing, whether it's something they said that feels misogynistic or feels anti-LGBTQ, or
racist,
ableist, whatever. And what happens is, if these accusations are true, they need to be called out for.
Yeah.
But sometimes what happens is just the first verbalization of that by somebody without a formal inquiry as to the validity of it is enough to ruin somebody, is enough to cause them to be cast out by the group, and it's never actually been investigated to see.
Or they may choose to leave because of the treatment.
Lynn says that they may choose to leave because of the treatment. So let's discuss this. What's going on here?
Well, people can take umbrage. I've experienced it myself because I'm a part of a different generation, and I'm not sensitive to all of what's considered to be microaggressions these days. And I may use an old-fashioned term, or I may say something inadvertently that is offensive to any other member. And if that happens, the best thing for that person to do who feels offended is to talk to me, maybe after the meeting, you know, or whenever you feel comfortable, and say, hey, fellow worker, you said a couple of things that made me very uncomfortable, and here's why. And by golly, I will try to rectify my behavior. You're my fellow worker. You need to feel safe. We need to work together to overturn capitalism. And we're not going to be doing it by backbiting and each other. So it's an unpopular thing sometimes to defend the right of your fellow workers and anybody else, really, to get a hearing and to at least be confronted directly about this alleged behavior. So that it can tear a group up, as Marilyn has said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes people's actions, especially in social media and online, boy, I've gotten myself in a couple of pots of hot water by saying something dumb online. These things can actually destroy a person's reputation. And why do that if they're an ally? If you know that the person has had years and years of dedicated service to the movement.
Exactly.
And to have even a couple of incidents, just by innuendo and rumor, have their reputation destroyed and they're banned from any other kind of forum, it's unfair and it's not democratic, and we're a democratic union.
They're presupposing a bias or a set of judgments on the person that they're judging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think they know their intention and don't necessarily know their intention,
right,
even though the result is
known. That's
its
called
idea.
Prejudging.
Yeah.
And that's where the word prejudice comes from.
Yep.
I'm not sure exactly what the answer is, but I know that it would be probably productive for all progressive groups to take a look at whether this behavior is happening within their group. I belong to a group, the Democratic Socialists of Tacoma, of America, but
right,
the Tacoma branch. And one of the things I've really appreciated, now I wasn't a member earlier when they were having problems exactly with this, and their membership was dropping off drastically. But what I have seen from them since I have been involved is they are very loving and flexible in assuming best intentions rather than worst intentions.
Right. And as I mentioned earlier, people from different cultures, people from different age demographics, people from different regions of North America have different language quirks and different mannerisms and cultures. And so if this offends you, the best possible thing and in-process thing to do is, like I said, you just, you know, have the courage to go up and say, I'd like to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to humiliate somebody in public. And a lot of times people say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that I was...
But then if the behavior keeps on going...
That's a different story.
Yeah.
That's a different... Like any other... Like we've recently seen in public events that there's been repeated behavior of concealing secret documents from the government.
Good example.
Yeah, and it happened again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And under court order and anything else, common decency, really, it should have stopped. Or... the individual should have at least fessed up, but that repeated behavior is a key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I just keep going back to intention. To me, that's such a big part of human communication, or the lack of it. But Marilyn made a point, and I just wanted to say that to presume someone's intentions are kind of negative or against you or your group, rather than just presuppose that basically everyone has good intentions, everyone present there at least, and have the same goals. But anyway, just, and then, you know, let them prove themselves otherwise, whichever way it goes.
Right. It can get extreme, and it can be disappointing simply because our union is direct, democratic, and caring. That's what the OT 101 teaches us. And what that means is that we take direct action. We take direct action within our ranks, right? We're democratic, small d democratic, which means we're going to take votes on things. And we're not a consensus outfit. Consensus is wonderful, but it's not always going to happen. So we operate in the principle of, you know, majority rules, minority rights, meaning that, you know, especially if it's a close vote, right? If a resolution, for instance, is overturned, you know, 51-49, well, that's a pretty close vote, and we should pay attention to the losing side's argument and see if we can, you know, see if we can understand or wrap our heads around it.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, if the listener has any ideas about that, they are welcome to contact us at wobradio.org or on our Facebook page, WOB Radio.
W-O-B.
Lynn says W-O-B, as in wobbly. And we would love to have your feedback on this, because I think this is a very pertinent topic, and it's something that's capable of tearing movements apart, and that's something we do not want to do.
Absolutely.
And so, when you enlighten somebody, as far as they say, hey, what did I do wrong? Did I say something wrong? Mm-hmm. Then you can change other people too, because then that person has a new perspective, ideally. Mm-hmm. And then they spread that and they tell a close friend. And so, you know, the goodness can spread.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Hello, listeners and fellow workers. I'm going to give you a little bit of a lowdown on what's happening in that wonderful land across the Narrows Bridge, Kitsap County and Bremerton and environs. And as many of you have heard in other broadcasts, we are trying to build a branch of the IWW out in that direction, so that we can concentrate on local issues. Both the Tacoma branches of the IWW and the Seattle branch, and also the Whatcom-Skagit branch, have been very, very generous with their support and with their advice. And we have a ways to go before we can charter. But what we've already started, you know, we already have shadow officers for when we get chartered. They can be official officers. We've started some committees. I'm on the media and literature committee out there. And we're working on starting our own radio station, which would be pretty cool, and have it, you know, IWW shop. And speaking of IWW shops, we started an Industrial Union 680. And on the old wobbly wheel chart, which is an organizational chart dreamed up way back when, but still very useful and flexible, the 600 series, and particularly Industrial Union 680, which is what we're calling it, deals with people who work in the home or from home. Okay, and so what we decided, we're going to form a wobbly shop that, first of all, helps each other. We're starting to, you know, the thing I talked about before about knowing each other's talents.
Mutual aid.
Yes, definitely. Definitely a mutual aid industrially. Thanks for saying that, because that's the whole spirit behind it. So, you know, if I've got a truck and you need to get something from A to B with a truck, why rent a U-Haul when you can call me up and say, you know, as long as it's not gigantic, can you help me move this object from point A to point B? I'll say, heck yeah. And that's labor, and it's labor freely given. And so that means it's mutual aid. So yeah, that's a big project, and it actually is a new thing as far as I know.
You mean it's a new thing where you are right now?
I think it's kind of new in the union. I think it's kind of unique in the union.
Oh, it's part of the IWW.
Yeah.
Because mutual aid groups
go
way back to the Depression.
Oh, yeah. And Paris Commune.
Yeah.
But anyway, when we talk about industrial union, we have a big organizational chart. And Tacoma is a GMB, meaning a general membership branch.
That's us.
That's us, which means that we actually, I'm an industrial union 320 guy, which deals with shipbuilding and ship repair.
And but I think I'm a 610, which is
health worker.
Health worker.
Exactly.
Mental health counselor.
And we have all these categories that can be very flexible for communications and for agriculture and for construction. But anyway, a general membership branch is composed of people from probably many different trades. We're a lot smaller than we were back in the 1920s, but we're starting this tradition back up. So an IU means an industrial union branch, and we also have shop branches, which means that a shop, for instance, a bicycle repair shop, all the people in the shop take out a red card. All right. Well, that's a what do they call it? A work branch. So generally speaking, you're going to find a dozen to a couple of dozen wobblies, all from different trades and from different backgrounds.
In a general membership.
In a GMB, general membership mm-hmm. branch. When we have 100,000 strong, then we can start our own industrial union. But we're starting one out now. And this goes along with another thing we started. Fellow worker donated their backyard. And what we've done is we had a work party, not all wobblies, but a lot of wobblies, and some local neighborhood people come. And what we did is that we laid cardboard down and wood chips and built raised beds and got a soil donation, topsoil donation. And the couple that brought it over donated their labor, their actual topsoil, their wood chips, and the truck. Wow. And so that was pretty good. And
that was very generous of them.
They were going to charge us, and we were going to pass the hat, so that we could. But they said, no, when we saw you guys, and there must have been 15 people working on this all at once, a little chaotic, but we also had a barbecue going. A couple of fellow workers brought fruit and, beverages. And so it was a really good, successful garden party.
And a good time was had by all.
A great time was had by all. And I'm going to be eating some cucumbers and some snap beans out of that thing. And the other thing, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, and just who was it that donated what? Was it just the bark?
No, bark and topsoil
and
the truck to haul it.
So when they came and saw you, or did you guys go to them?
They came, they delivered, because this was I don't know the exact relationship, a friend of a friend type thing.
Okay.
And they came over and delivered this stuff. And we just attacked it. And the guy had a nice truck. And we were careful not to dent his truck bed. But what we unloaded all the chips. We unloaded the topsoil. We worked together. We took it in buckets, put it in the backyard because it was a little. And there was about 15 of us steadily working. And a couple of people who were not wobblies. They just were interested neighborhood people.
After this show, you've got to show me some pictures.
I didn't take any pictures. No, I was busy.
Okay.
I was shoveling. You always told me I could shovel some stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so,
well, that's wonderful news.
It's great. And fellow worker Aaron is really, really happy about having this go up in their garden, in their backyard. And this ties in with the other thing. This is not an entirely wobbly action, but it relates. And that's the Kitsap Permanent Real Estate Collaborative, I think it's a coalition.
Oh, tell the listener about this.
Well, we've started, it was actually one of our fellow workers' ideas, but there were already people trying to work towards this. And what it is a real estate collective, meaning sort of an intentional community that you can buy into, right? That we buy land together, we manage the land together, and I'm pretty uncertain how it's all going to work out with the nuts and bolts, but I'm intrigued by the idea. And so I'm not a full member of it, but they've given us some good information. Fellow worker Sean is a full member of it, and he's got a lot of legal expertise that he mm-hmm. can advise with.
And I want to be a member of it.
Do you really?
I do.
You want come on out then, we'll hook you up with a meeting. Happens in the library. They didn't have one this weekend.
Which library?
The Port Orchard Library.
Okay. Gordon, I'm going to connect with you after the show.
Okay.
Maybe we should tell the listener if they want to know.
Well, I would just say look up KPREC, right, which is Kitsap Permanent Real Estate Collective.
KPREC.org?
Yes, I would think.
Okay, .org.
Correct.
And that's going to connect them with this land collective.
Exactly.
And they can learn more about it.
Right.
And they can support it if they'd like to.
Indeed. And it just got off the ground, and I got a really good benefit from just attending one of their meetings, because I didn't have a clue. I've got all these books. Guess what? I've got all these books in my house. So what's happening is that we're going to start a library, an IWW library. And it might not have a physical nuts and bolts, what do they call it, brick and mortar place right now. And I have no idea how to be a librarian. No idea. It's a whole science. So
well, I've got a lot of books for you, and I've got some bookshelves.
Excellent. Excellent. My idea is to buy a shipping container and start a library in that, but a few people didn't like it because it's aesthetically unpleasing. It looks too industrial. And I'm thinking, paint a big logo. Paint flowers on it.
Yeah, industrial workers of the world.
Yeah, there you go. But as long as we have a safe place for these books. And so this person set me up with a platform, I guess, an app called Libib, L-I-B-I-B. And I don't know how to use it, so I'm going to try to, you know, hang around and get some pointers, because all these people, I have to, full disclosure, they're all much younger than I am, and they do this stuff in their sleep. You know, they know how to use these apps and computer programs. I'm not so certain about it. So, but anyway, it appears to be a way to make a big list, sort of like a spreadsheet, your title, your subject. You know, and we have a couple hundred books just to begin with.
Mm-hmm. So. Plus, we have some movies.
Yeah, we have tapes.
And we have music.
Other media. And
we have newspapers.
From back in the day.
We have newspapers from all over the country.
Yep.
We've got incarcerated worker newspapers.
That's true.
From Spain, from Portugal, from
yep.
all over the world. We have indigenous information about
Very important.
Struggles.
Very important.
Yeah.
That's another item, if I might, to address. We're reaching out. We're making a lot of contacts. One of our fellow workers, who's an early childhood educator, you guys met fellow worker Liz. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she has pretty good connections with the Suquamish tribe.
Oh, good.
And also, we have other connections with indigenous people, because fellow worker Sean is an indigenous Alaskan. And so he's done his own outreach to local groups. So what we're doing is we're trying to spread the message of the IWW in solidarity with these movements of indigenous people, like Land Back, things like that. So that's another thing we're doing out in the wilds of Kitsap County. And we look forward to, you know, welcoming our fellow Wobblies out there when we get chartered. We're going to have a charter party.
That'd be great.
I enjoy how this segment went from about a minute to a full-blown discussion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're obviously
no,
very
it's passion
enthused.
And it's exciting news.
Yeah,
and I'm glad that you presented it.
Yeah, very enthused.
And I'm ready for
exciting.
A party, and I want to lend my support to this land thing.
Yeah.
And the Mutual Aid Society.
It's interesting, and I'm old-fashioned in the sense that I look at workplace organizing. Okay, I'm kind of a traditional union guy. This is workplace organizing. And I'm only now beginning to see the ramifications for intersecting with other community progress
That's
groups.
It. When you start dealing with a person as more than a worker, but as a human being,
right.
you start to make the connections.
Yes.
We're not flat. We're not two-dimensional.
No, we're not.
Well, moving on, let's talk about, and I don't know anything about this, so I hope you guys can help me, climbers on Everest. And listener, I want to apologize, but it's a kind of lame apology. I've been dealing with a whole bunch of house remodeling and wonderful visits, but distracting visits. So I haven't done my homework this week. So who can talk about climbers on Everest? Or is that something we'll have to leave for Noah?
Well, I know a little bit about it. I know that the climbers over the last, you know, ever since Edmund Hillary and Sherpa Tanzing, got to the top, there's been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who have attempted or have succeeded in climbs, and they've got to take oxygen. What is Everest? 28,000 feet. It's as high as an airplane flies. And these oxygen canisters get discarded. Mm-hmm. There's even some bodies of dead climbers that are up on the side of the mountain there that it just costs too much. They're frozen.
So, no, a lot of it has thawed.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, that's why they're appearing.
That makes sense.
And I heard also that, is it something like 16 climbers this season have died?
Mm-hmm.
Because they are not sufficiently prepared to be doing the climb.
Not only that, but climate change has shrunken the ice and the glaciers.
Yeah.
And so people are falling through crevasses and just generally not, as you say, not prepared for the new conditions on the mountain. That's all I really know about it.
Okay.
But I know they leave behind tremendous amounts of garbage, which doesn't seem right. They're mountain climbers. You'd think that they would have all outdoorsy people that I know pack in and pack out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's very, very expensive. You got to have guides. You got to have. It's really a rich man's plaything now, pretty much, I think, or a nation.
Unless you're a Sherpa.
Yeah, well.
Or rich woman's also.
Okay, I'll give you that. But that's the only thing I really know about what's going on up there. Fellow worker Noah had some other things.
Yeah. And the listener may be aware of Amazon's plans to build a mega warehouse. And I wanted to give you more information about it if you're concerned about that. And you should be. So Bridge Industrial is trying to build a 2.5 million square foot warehouse in South Tacoma. The City of Tacoma Planning and Development Service Department is overseeing the project. They gave a determination of mitigated non-significance.
What the hell does that mean?
You tell me how this can be non-significant. This could mean 12,000 new vehicle trips a day. I think that's significant. South Tacoma already has the worst air quality and the shortest lifespans, and among the highest incidents of low birth rates and heart disease rates in all of Pierce County. And to put all that pollution right in their midst, I call that significant. All but 25 of the 150-acre plot of land will be paved, and it's paving over an aquifer that was used for years in Tacoma. And we're already facing a climate crisis and potential water shortage. And I think paving over an aquifer is very significant.
Yes.
Do you know it also located? Would impact wetlands, scarce trees, and green space in the area, and all the species that depend on that habitat. I call that significant.
Mm.
What did you ask me, Lynn?
Where is it located? Do you know an intersection? Or?
Well, I'm going to give you a website to take a look at in just a few minutes. Okay. The placement of this facility is an already overburdened, formerly redlined neighborhood, and is clearly not centering equity and anti-racism. Truck drivers, last-mile delivery workers, warehouse fulfillment are usually not high-paying jobs or union jobs. Teamsters number 28 and United's Food and Commercial Workers Local 367 oppose this warehouse, and currently, the city is not doing a health impact assessment as part of the permit process. I am inviting everybody to learn more, to donate, and to take action, and to show up at the meetings that they've got planned. And this is where you need to go to find out about these meetings. It's B as in boy, I-T dot L-Y slash Tacoma Warehouse. So it's bit.ly/Tacoma Warehouse.
All one word, right?
All one word.
Bit.ly. Okay. Tacoma what?
So if you go on that, or you could go on Facebook to redefine Tacoma. If you go on the city site, you'll hear nothing but good things about it, because a lot of these people are donating to city council jobs. So please find out more. This is not a good thing for Tacoma. Yes, we want jobs, but we don't want jobs that will make our environment harder to live in.
And it's telling that two major AFL-CIO unions, who would probably benefit from having this warehouse, they have taken a stand against it.
Yeah. We are also in Pride Month, and I want to give a shout out to all of our LGBTQI fellow workers and fellow human beings.
Hmm.
I take pride in your pride.
Hello, fellow workers. This is Noah speaking. My pronouns are he, him, and I've been a member of the IWW since March of 2021. For Pride Month this year, we would like to highlight some local activism that took place a few months back during a Puyallup school board meeting regarding protections for transgender students and their rights to privacy, especially with teacher or counselor interactions, in regards to self-identification as either being queer or trans. We understand that in the present day, there have been hundreds of anti-trans bills that have been filed since the beginning of this year, largely in part due to local actors drumming up a reactionary rhetoric against some of the most vulnerable and marginalized individuals in our society today. We hope that this interview may be edifying to you, educational to you, and hopefully will encourage you to stand up for our trans brothers and sisters and non-binary persons whenever their rights are under attack. Thank you so much for tuning into WAB Radio.
And welcome back, fellow listeners, to WAB Radio. This is a production of the Tacoma General Membership Branch of the Industrial Workers of the World, a union founded in 1905 representing all industries. This is being broadcast from 101.9 LPFM Radio Tacoma, KTAH, and is now also being broadcast by 95.3 KTQA. Today, I am joined by a member of the DSA, as well as myself, of course, talking today a little bit about a recent Puyallup School Board meeting that happened a couple weeks back, what that meeting was about, and what that means to residents both here in Tacoma and in the greater Puget Sound. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jennifer Strickling, fellow member of the DSA. I'm here to talk about the Puyallup School District and the, what are we calling this? Like a protest? Like
yeah, the anti-trans / pro-trans students protest. Okay. At the recent Puyallup School Board meeting. We were both there a couple weeks back. I heard about the announcement of the DSA rallying people to show up to that school board meeting because, not to go off on a bit of a tangent here, but basically there was a local evangelical mega church pastor who had riled up a bunch of his congregants to go to the school board meeting because the school board meeting was basically going over and reaffirming their policies that protect trans students and specifically their privacy when it comes to information about their transness getting back to their home and potentially putting them at risk. After the megachurch tried to rile up their supporters to go to the school board meeting, and their whole message was, no, the parents need to know because they're our kids and this will damage our trust with the students and the teachers and the school board in general. You and I both showed up because we believed that trans students deserve their privacy and that they deserve to have some confidentiality with their teachers in regards to their identity if they don't feel like they're safe at home. As we've seen from statistics from both recent and far years past, kids that are trans are often harassed, bullied, pressured by their family to suppress their identity or try to change their identity via conversion therapy or merely, you know, going back in the egg, so to speak. You know, we really wanted to make sure that we showed up to that school board meeting to affirm that trans kids deserve to be protected.
Absolutely. Well, and also on top of that, a higher risk for, you know, suicide and a bunch of other issues.
Absolutely.
Per those experiences, right? So you've got, you know, a large chunk of a specific group of people that a law was created to protect them, that a whole entire organization of people that most of the time don't even participate in the public school system at all, right?
That was the funniest part of that, about that board meeting, actually. So basically, we got to the board meeting. This is my best recollection of it. We got to the board meeting. The board meeting opened. They did some general business in the beginning. They recognized that there was a lot of people at this meeting. This was like a school classroom, almost like a large school classroom just off of the library. But there was probably like 300 people packed in there. I'm pretty sure the fire department would have been pissed. One half of the room was all of the people who were against the school policy.
I would say like one third, right?
They were all off kind of in one corner. And I noticed that the security guards were specifically standing around them because they were heckling quite a bit.
Well, even when people came to speak from that side, there'd still be people speaking from our side that were in that mix, which I thought was really interesting because, you know, I expected anybody coming from that little corner to come out and, you know, speak some crazy. But
yeah, or try to take over the meeting in general. As we've seen with other school board meetings, meetings regarding LGBT students, COVID policies, masking policies over the past couple of years, they can tend to turn into some pretty hostile confrontations.
Right.
So the school board opened up the meeting. They gave their positions on the reaffirmation of the school's policy. And the law that you mentioned, I believe, was passed by the Washington legislature and signed by the governor,
in 2014.
Yeah. So this has been around for a while. All the school board was really doing was briefly rediscussing it and updating that policy as part of their policy procedures in the modern day. So the meeting opened up. They all gave their positions. There was a couple school board members there who were against this policy because they felt like it would, you know, threaten parent-teacher trust. And then they opened it up to public comments. And this is the funny part, because everybody that showed up there to speak, they had properly registered beforehand with the school board to speak. There was some kind of addendum to the online announcement of the school board meeting where you could sign up to speak publicly on this for a period of, I believe it was 3 minutes.
Yep, you had 3 minutes, and there was actually cards mm-hmm. on the table. So there's a certain allotment of amount of cards for speakers because they only have a certain amount of time in a meeting. So,
and we'll get to that in a second. All the people that were there to speak had properly registered to speak beforehand. All of the counter trans protective policies people over in the one third of the room, I did a bit of a deep dive on this. Mm-hmm. They had gone to their church website and signed up to show up collectively, but that sign up was not to speak. That was just to go together as a church group. So when they got there, they thought, oh, well, we signed up to be here. That means we get to have a public comment. And there was only space for about 20 public comments. And so they, as public comments went on, by I think number 13 or 14, they started to get pretty riled up, and they had started heckling the school board, being like, well, why can't we speak? Why can't we sign up? And they're like, well, you didn't sign up properly. So what was some of your recollections about the school board meeting?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because I don't feel like, I feel like the people that spoke, you know, for the trans kids, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, whether that was, it was a very educated group of people. It was very people that worked in the field that have a stake in the game. And then, you know, once they changed the rules to let these other folks speak, it kind of devolved. I mean, it was pretty interesting. You still had a mixture of people speaking for trans people, even in their speaking time, right? Like mm-hmm. that they were, you know, allotted because they wanted to change the rules for, you know, the privileged class that is complaining about this thing that doesn't affect them at all. The thing that stuck out to me is people saying, you know, there was a man, I think that one of the people that were organizing this from mm-hmm. their side the week before the previous school board meeting.
Yes.
He, you know, they're entering everything with, well, I don't have children here. I don't have grandkids here. I'm retired. I have basically no stake in this at all, but here's my opinion, mm-hmm. you know.
Butting into business that isn't theirs.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, then why, you know, for me, I'm just sitting here like, this is kind of what made me like, we need to do something, because these people can't just bully everybody around, you know, just because that they have an opinion. I have got opinions about things too, but I don't go into spaces that I don't belong that aren't really there, you know, that aren't going to affect me to try to make their lives harder. Like, that's just bullying. That's not like, you know, that's not right. It's not like I walk into their church and, you know, force them to be feminist or something, you know, like.
one can dream, but yeah.
Maybe, yeah, no, in the future.
I had stuck around, so the meeting started around 6. I had taken off that evening around 8:30. Right around 8:30, we had gotten through about 13 to 14 out of 20 public comments. Mm-hmm. That was the time allotted in order for people to speak. And by the way, the gross majority of the public comments in what I believe was the first half of the meeting, the meeting went overtime. The gross majority of the public comments were principals, teachers, exactly. music teachers, other staff, trans students themselves talking mm-hmm. about how the policy has protected them and helped them, and even helped protect and made other students feel safe who weren't trans or just weren't LGBT in general. Everyone was really, really supportive of the policy, and I think that's kind of what kicked off the conservative part of the room saying, like, well, hang on, it's only one side of the room that's being able to speak right now.
And I think there was mass confusion on the other side. There was a belief that there was something that was going to be done about mm-hmm. a law that's already been voted and established in the state legislature. You know, it's like, it's not something that the school board had any control over or could change or could vote on, you know, and they just didn't have a basic understanding of how civics works. You know, it's just very frustrating when you're, you know, you've just got a bunch of people that aren't, they're not even being effective in their, not that I want them to be effective because they don't, but you know, you're talking about a state legislature that's 100% Republican controlled in their district, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like the people that they should be complaining to are people they elected.
So yeah, how long were you at the meeting actually?
I stayed there almost until the very end. So
wow,
I was
how long
starving.
Did that go?
10 o'clock. So,
ooh.
Yeah, I tried to help somebody. Somebody seemed like they were pretty afraid for their safety, mm-hmm. like towards the end. So I tried to, like, that's when I decided to leave, is to try to, you know, be supportive and make sure that they weren't going to walk into the parking lot with a bunch of crazy people afterwards.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah, I was there till 10. And I remember one of the school board members who actually leans very, very far right, didn't want to continue to go on, you know, with the whole entire thing. And it was like the only time I actually agreed with anybody from that side. I was like, yeah, we should probably just all go home.
Yeah.
After the first round. But, you know, I guess it was good to hear how unbalanced the thinking was on the other side, because mm-hmm. I think that that's, you know, even with reason in the school board members repeating repeatedly that this was from 2014 and they weren't going to be able to vote on it, or, you know, they had no control over this, they still
And
continued.
Even the conservative ones, sorry to interrupt, yeah. even the conservative ones were basically like, we're just here to let the parents speak their mind. We can't really do anything to change this, because if we tried to go against state policy, then the state's going to come after us. Mm-hmm. And also the students are going to feel unsafe. So we're just discussing this is basically
right.
all this was.
Right. Well, and you have, you know, the children that they had speaking on their side, because they were kids, you know, there was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that he's even, I mean, I don't know if he's going to public school, but it didn't sound like somebody who was going to public school, sound like somebody who was either homeschooled or going to some sort of Christian-based school, mm-hmm. which is fine. I'm a believer, but I don't believe that my beliefs should impact other people's, like, right to express themselves, or, you know, like, that's not what my belief system, and so having somebody paint a belief system in such hate and, like, mm-hmm. disdain is really...
This kid was coming from the more conservative religious part.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He was. And really very... It's just hard because, you know, I know that those views will change with time and age and maturity when he meets people that, you know, are from a different background and has real conversations. Right now, you're talking about a sheltered kid in a sheltered environment that hasn't had any exposure to the world, and it's obvious, you know? So mm-hmm. the Christian nationalism piece is really challenging. Like, I think that, you know, having people come up there and say this country was founded on Judeo-Christian values when this country was founded on religious freedom
yeah.
is very challenging. It's hard to wrap my mind around this whole other set of facts that isn't based in reality or knowledge or any type of, I mean, it's where are they getting it? Like, mm-hmm. You know, and why are they allowing, I don't know, like, you know, fear and whatever. The whole different relationship with news and what's real and what's not real right now is a super very large challenge. And I don't know the best way to attack that. When people just believe different things and they think that they're right, even when it's repeated over and over and over again that they aren't. I don't know how, you know, I don't know how to tackle that. That's, I think, the huge piece that, it's a huge fight that we're all fighting right now, so.
Yeah, I mean, speaking as somebody who myself was homeschooled for a number of years as a kid, I can definitely tell you that it's not that hard to maintain an echo chamber, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to information about people with different backgrounds or different ways of life that you haven't personally interacted with. It's much easier to double down if all the voices around you are doubling down too. So it kind of becomes right. like a ripple effect in that sense, especially with more insular communities, like even large churches, especially like this one that was present at mm-hmm. the school board meeting, can often act as kind of like an echo chamber. Speaking of that church, though, I did a bit of an internet deep dive on, you know, what, obviously, what church was it? Who runs it? Like, mm-hmm. what have been their previous policy statements? They're definitely a evangelical megachurch in the Puyallup region. The lead pastor there is very conservative in his outlook on the world. Their Facebook page has posted stuff very weird like conservative political stuff that you normally wouldn't think that even an evangelical megachurch would do. Right. Like, hey, sign this petition so that cops can chase after, you know, people breaking the law again over like petty misdemeanors and stuff like that.
Right.
Or like there was another one talking about obviously the COVID vaccine and the mask restrictions and, you know, trying to have a public space between people and congregations.
I also believe they let Ed Troyer speak at their church directly to people. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's, yeah.
They're very cozy with law enforcement by the looks of it, yeah.
Yeah, and not necessarily, like, not all law enforcement is bad. There are very good law enforcement, but there's a lot of law enforcement right now that has some questionable characters that we're obviously seeing throughout the country. So,
yeah, or just policies and practices in general that they have to abide by whether or not they agree with it or not.
Right.
Yeah. And you are currently listening to Radio Tacoma 101.9 FM KTAH. That too is very much an insular community, which I'm sure we can tackle in a separate interview.
I just don't go to church to hear police give me sermons. Like, that's not really what my objective is when I'm going to church. You know, my objective is to hear what the Lord has for me, right? Like, it's not necessarily gonna come from, you know, somebody who's pushing their own private little agenda. That's that. I think that's the core problem. It's the grifting all across the board with, you know, people. You know, people are in a space. They're going to church. They think that they're doing something for their soul, and they're being completely manipulated by these types of organizations. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous to conflate your faith or in your spirituality with with Christian nationalism. I mean, it's like a whole level, and it's extremely dangerous, and it's very Hitler-esque. You know, you're talking about things that there's a reason they don't. It's a reason why separation of church and state exists, right? Like, there's a reason that's important and a value, especially in a melting pot culture that we have. So, you know, trans and LGBTQ kids might be on the chopping block now, but it's like, it's just a matter of time for the rest of us, you know, like, right. Depending on how we identify in the world. It's a very slippery slope, you know, so.
Yeah, and especially as that kind of Christian nationalist rhetoric has built up so much just within the past decade. I mean, it was definitely kind of beginning. It's more recent iteration, probably over the past decade, maybe even before Trump got into office. Kind of broadening the scope outside of this school board meeting, we have seen a lot of other interactions like this at other school boards, you know, churches and conservative groups blaming things like teachers unions is kind of a very popular target for them, saying that it's the teachers unions kind of pushing, you know, gender ideology and cultural neo-Marxism in the school, which, I mean, as somebody who leans towards Marx myself, it's like, there's no Marx in the public school system. These kids are not being taught about dialectical materialism or, you know, the sufferings under the wage system by any means, or CRT and stuff like that. It is very interesting how, yes, there are the big money conservative think tanks that are aligned with the GOP that are pushing a lot of this, but there's also this blend of almost this Christian nationalist conservative kind of wave that really does a lot of the footwork of it. It's kind of like a top-down structure of the think tanks get the ideas going, the churches pick it up, and then they get their congregants to follow through.
That is the problem, too, right? Like, when you're looking at a school board, it's supposed to be grassroots. It's supposed to be from the people and up, but you do have this top-down narrative that's coming from this side, and it doesn't, like, in this is a prime example, right? Like, we are in Washington. This is a fight that they're having in Florida, right? Like, with the schools. But for some reason, that fight came to our front doorsteps, you know, like, in Puyallup, because there's this belief that there's this law that's going to be voted on, which isn't even on the table at all. You know, it's not even, it's already been filed away. It's, you know, it's ingrained in the legal system, and tough, you'd have to change that law in order to make a difference, which they don't know how to do. So they're just aimlessly harassing people.
Right. It is the backlash of a shrinking population that doesn't feel like their voice is heard, and they're becoming much more and more extreme. I guess it is interesting to talk about Florida, because it seems like the issue is obviously a really hotbed issue there and in other parts of majority, you know, red states, majority conservative states. But this is something that's now beginning to happen very much in quote-unquote blue states as well. I kind of have a funny anecdote about this difference between kind of more conservative parts of counties or states versus more liberal parts of counties and states. I have a friend who was a longtime social worker. He now works in Olympia with the legislature. But he was a longtime social worker, and he was doing a house call out to somewhere along Highway 7, someplace close to Mount Rainier, in order to check up on a kid that he was responsible for. And at one point, he said, right outside, right as I left Tacoma, suddenly it was like pro-life billboards and like all these Trump signs and all these advertisements for like really conservative politicians and like all of these right-wing Jesus signs by the side of the road. And he's like, wow, I never really knew that Pierce County had this part to it. It's so weird. Like, how come I never heard of this? It's like 20 to 30 minutes outside of every city,
yeah,
major city in this country, it's pretty much like that.
Right.
And I think that this is kind of an, especially in context to the Puyallup school board meeting, it kind of adds to the context of, even though we do have these lovely little islands of like cities and school boards that are like, yes, we want to make sure that these kids feel safe. We want to make sure that these policies are followed through on. We want to make it inclusive to everybody, mm-hmm, as much as possible so that they can have the safe learning environment needed for this education. But there is that creep. There is kind of that reactionary wave splashing up against the rocks, so to speak.
I believe the right wing is trying to target those types of positions all across the board. I think that they want to infiltrate from, you know, these. They think that if they turn these certain positions, like, that they can sort of affect, you know, whatever they need. They're, you know, and they're bouncing off positions, right? They're political stepping stones. You run for a school board, you can run for something else. You're mm-hmm. going to get the name rec in the community to do so. So if they make inroads there, right, if we don't vote the right kind of people into these positions and take these types of elections seriously, we're going to end up with a minority rule. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a terrifying version of that.
Right, so. Especially with the state of, like, gerrymandering and political disinformation in both mainstream and alternative news sources and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
You said something earlier about it being very Hitler-esque. And I think when it comes to the quote-unquote debate in this country over, you know, the existence and respect for trans people, kind of going back to that example that you gave, you know, back in the 20s and 30s in Germany, there was a very popular left-wing movement. There were very strong labor unions. Mm-hmm. There was definitely, it wasn't a terribly homogenous society. It was pretty culturally diverse and mm-hmm. pretty ethnically and religiously diverse as well. And it is very interesting to see how these reactionary conservative models are kind of following what a lot of Hitler and the boys were doing as well. If you can't go after the socialists and their powerful constituency in the legislature and their organizing, and if you can't go after the labor unions and their powerful base of, you know, rank and file workers, you just have to keep digging down and down and down until you can find a group of people that you can really rile people up
about. Or you can fracture them, right?
Or, yeah, you can fracture them.
You can fracture,
as well.
Like, if somebody has some sort of leaning one direction, you can pick them off from those bigger groups, right?
So make them focus on one specific thing and keep them distracted from everything else.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's kind of like, are you familiar with, like, Phyllis Schlafly in the 80s?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, whipping up, you know, the John Birch Society folks. You know, it's the same stuff. It's the same kind of group, too. It's like, it's almost like a repackaging of that, right? Like, you've got these extreme, I mean, she made, like, associations with the KKK. I mean, she, you know, so it's like, when you think about that, it's very Hitler-esque, like, in a sense. It's like they believe that they have the supreme, they should have the supreme control in their belief systems, and that they should, you know, it's not Christianity. Like, it's the opposite of Christianity, you know? So I don't know.
It's not rendering unto Caesar. It's wanting to become Caesar.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah. Yeah. What Jesus said, you know, he's like, give to Caesar, you know, or if this has his face.
Render unto Caesar what Caesar, render unto God what is God's. Yeah.
Amen. Right. Mm-hmm. So they have it all twisted and all backwards, and it's very, very, it's hard, you know, like.
Yeah, but no, don't get me started on the whole, like, Judeo-Christian beliefs thing, because I've heard of a lot of more progressive, both Christians and Jewish people being like, that doesn't exist. That is a banner for an idea that doesn't actually really have any kind of theological or historical basis, like. You know, obviously, you know, this isn't to say that there isn't an overlap in those two religious communities in regards to their history and their culture, but, like, Judeo-Christian values being the foundation of America it's a very popular tagline in the more conservative religious elements in this country, but it almost seems like it's phrased in such a way that it's like, yeah, it's Judeo-Christian values, but it's the Christian ones that are the right ones. And we're just trying to like, we're trying to be the person who's awkwardly leaning in too far into the photo with our friend that we just made 5 minutes ago.
Right. There's a lot of that, like tokenizing different groups or cultures. There was a lot of that in what they were saying as well, you know, at the school board meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd find somebody to tokenize like some sort of format or group. And, you know, the week before they were talking about how adversity is a problem, you know, and it's like you can't, they changed their whole tune when they saw the crowd was there. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It's very challenging because you have it, like I said earlier, like they're going to be picking off different groups as they, you know, if they make any room, to pick off this one group, the next one's up, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I really believe the reason why they want to make abortion illegal is so that they can lose the female vote. Like that's, you know.
Yeah, so they don't have to depend on that anymore.
Yeah, because it costs them elections. So it's just all about, it's still a voting rights problem, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's still like, If you make all these things illegal, and if you make it illegal for people to vote who've committed a crime, now you don't have to worry about women, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's a lot. The thing is though, we all have to band together. Like it doesn't matter where you're like it, right now. If you're farther left than a far right extremist, I mean, even if you're a Reagan Republican, like you belong with us now because that's the only way.
I guess on a broader national level too, it really shows you that the conservative base of this country is kind of flailing for something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. After the defeat of, actually I would even go further before that, I would say right around the time Trump became popular as a candidate around 2015-2016, it really seemed like they were trying to coalesce around these very, very specific things to go against, mm-hmm. but it didn't really seem like they had any kind of policy base to actually look towards.
Right.
Things like, any kind of conservative economic reform or foreign relations or stuff like that. It's like, no, it's CRT. It's going after trans people. It's going after unions. It's going after poor people who depend on, benefits and welfare and all this other stuff. Like, well, as long as we look like we're against something, then therefore it must look like we're for something. And they aren't really for much of anything, quite frankly.
Right. Yeah. Well, and, going back to, like, founding on Judeo-Christian value, what about all the people that were here prior to white people showing up, mm-hmm. right? Like, were they Judeo-Christian? But let's not dig into, the straight massacre of, the Native American people that inhabited the land and still habitate the land now, but absolutely. Not on the scale that they used to. It's like digging into that would be CRT, and we can't be learning things because if we learn things, then,
it is historical revisionism at its finest, yeah.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating how they can restructure all of these, if you threaten this idea that I might be wrong, then it's sort of, I don't know, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Bringing it back to specifically the conservative and reactionary religious backlash against like teachers unions and stuff, mm-hmm. like that. That's a big part of their narrative as well, is the idea that these teachers unions, which exist to protect people who work in the educational field from being exploited or, receiving poor wages and benefits for their labor, they're kind of pointing to them and being like, well, if it's not the Democratic Party or if it's not, transgender neo-Marxism or whatever they call it, then it must be the teachers unions that are pushing this. It's the teachers unions coming up with this curriculum and injecting it into the school boards and into the classrooms. And it's like, where are you getting this from?
Yeah.
And it really kind of, it's this weird blend of hating trans people or hating anybody outside of who they see as the real Americans or the real Christians. And then this very anti-union backlash to teachers organizing, wanting better wages, wanting better conditions, more protections in the classroom. And it's this very, very weird socially conservative, economic conservative blend there.
Right.
And I find that just to be kind of an interesting interaction. But yeah, it is also taking a toll on teachers and the teachers unions as well, because
it's attacking a voting bloc.
Mm-hmm. Right? And also it's like threatening them directly with like violence and harm and harassment.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I think that, anybody working in, I don't know if this is a symptom of the pandemic, right? Like, people are just angry, people are a little, you know, a lot of people have died. So there's a lot of just anger in general. People with unresolved feelings, you know. And so if you're ripe for that, like if you're ripe for that loss and that, you know, that hurt in your heart or whatever, and somebody's exploiting that, you know, I've lost a lot of people in my life, and, you know, right after they had passed wasn't necessarily like the most sane time in my life, you know. But, you know, I think you're ripe for that exploitation, for people to, you know, predatorily take control of, you know, your loss and your hurt. And so I think you have some of these people are not, I don't believe they'll always be in that zone. All we need is some conversations that are grounding and real, and I think that we can approach them and have those in a calm way with people, but never in a group like that. When they're angry and mobbed up, it's a whole thing, you know.
Although, speaking on the COVID thing, I think it's interesting because it was right around COVID when school board meetings really began to become weaponized by this by these reactionary ideologies and communities. And then now that the, you know, mask mandates or encouraging people to get vaccinated has kind of died off.
Well, I think they're looking for new battles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're using the same platform that they did before because they saw that as a more direct way to, you know, attack the system, quote unquote.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a grifting. It's a way to get money, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a way to, if you're working on these things and you think you're a social justice warrior, like, you know, you're able to convince people to donate a little bit more if you feed on their anger.
Or anti-social justice warrior.
Well, in their minds, whatever. Like, they're
the justice warriors. The Christian justice warriors.
They're fighting the super woke, you know, they think that they're just, but it's the opposite of just, but, you know, in their minds, right? Like, that's sort of the, you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that you kind of mentioned part of the solution earlier, which is that we need to make sure that the people who are getting voted into these lower level government positions of people who are on school boards, right. If you participate in a teachers union, making sure that you have stewards and representatives in your union that fight for your rights and fight for good wages and protections for teachers, because they are becoming more and more directly threatened by these kinds of reactionary organizations. On top of that, you know, people who run for city council, people who run mm-hmm. for mayor, it's the lower level government positions that are really going to affect directly a lot of your life.
Right.
And I think the other aspect of this as well, coming from like a IWW, we love direct action kind of perspective, is, yeah, you actually do have to show up to these school board meetings.
Mm-hmm.
What happened that evening a couple weeks back was the majority of the surrounding community and the community within Puyallup, right, and the students who go to the schools and the teachers and so on and the staff and so on and so forth, actually showing up and being like, no, we are directly here and present in the room giving public comment and saying that we are not going to let this one particular group of people decide policy for everybody else involved, and actually showing up on the ground is very, very important in this situation. We need Absolutely. To counter this attack at the school board level.
Yeah. We need to be at those things, and we also need to be in the voting booths, right? Mm-hmm. Making the decision, you know, making the right decisions. Because if, and we need to pay attention to, you know, who's running who in some of these things, like what party is running, you know, because it's like somebody, I noticed this, there's a lot of people that will use, you know, political ads or whatever that make it look like they might be more one way or the other. But in reality, their value system and what they will vote for or speak to is not what it looks like, if that makes sense. So it's important to be involved. And you get involved and you get to know the way they think by showing up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're going to know.
And also directly asking them questions whenever they do have public, you know.
Absolutely.
There are some moments where it is appropriate to heckle a politician. And when it comes to issues like this, I think it's definitely one of them. You know, you have to directly ask them, are you in support of these policies that mm-hmm. protect marginalized and disadvantaged people? What exactly are your policies further to help protect them better? What are we going to do about this backlash that could directly harm their lives or the lives of people around them, you know? You Absolutely. Have to make sure, you do have to trust but verify that the people that you are voting for to protect those people are actually going to do something about it.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of like with the houselessness crisis. It's like, well, we care about houseless people, and we want to provide more homes and more programs to help benefit them. And then they get elected to city council, and then they pass a camping ban. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's yeah. Yeah, you need or to trust
rezone something so mm-hmm. a developer can build, you know, take out really nice home. You know, it's kind of like in Puyallup, the Meridian Mobile Home Estates. You know, you had the city council that rezoned mobile home parks, and it was mostly Hispanic community living there, and they had to find a new place to live. You know, it was just very
which is hugely disrupting to their lives.
And it's like, and then you have these same people that are complaining about homelessness, right? Like, it's like mm-hmm. it's like no, you don't get to complain about it not and be part of the problem at the same time. Like, that's not
yeah, maybe there would be less houseless people living in front of your storefront or lighting fires in the alley if we actually like gave them housing assistance and
treated it like a right.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
gave them the mental health care and the rehab that they need in order to get their lives back on track. Right. Yeah, because they are stuck in a cycle of poverty that is much more difficult.
Well, than and you know, to get like out of. Most Americans right now could easily be in that position with mm-hmm. one medical issue. You know,
two paychecks.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's not. We're not living in a time that protects, you know, it's just a few bad experiences before, you know, we're all, you know, right there where they are, right? So yeah. It's, you know, it's about compassion. It's always about compassion. You know, like if you, we need to be voting with compassion, we need to be organizing with compassion, and we need to, you know, approach all of these things.
Yeah. You know, like you said, we definitely need to make sure that we pay attention to future school board meetings like this that discuss protections for marginalized students like LGBT students or, you know, students of color, other mm-hmm. issues like that, making sure that history is taught accurately in our schools to our students so that they have a better perspective on this country in regards to our own direct action in our own lives, you know, providing that education if they can't get it as well. This is definitely an existential issue that will continue to affect not only Tacoma and Puyallup, but a lot of this state and a lot of communities like Puyallup in the future.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for joining me today and talking to me about this.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you would like to hear more interviews like this, as well as more episodes of WAB Radio Hour, please listen in to 101.9 Radio Tacoma, KTAH, and 95.3 KTQA. We hope that you join us again in the future, and solidarity.
Talking about local events, this morning I was up at Basalt Field gathering signatures for the tenants' rights, tenants' bill of rights.
Please mention that. That's a local thing. That's mm-hmm. a Pierce County.
We're trying, and by we, it's a coalition of a lot of different groups. It's Democratic Socialists, Home and Tacoma for All.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Lived Experience
Coalition.
It's many different groups, and we are concerned about the increasing homelessness. We're concerned that rents have risen 47% in the last couple years.
That's terrible.
And it's becoming an unlivable place for people of modest income. So we're trying to get enough signatures by June 15th. We're almost there.
If you live in Tacoma, what's the number of the petition? What's the number of the initiative?
2023-01. 2023-01.
Okay, and
001.
Is that a Pierce County or Tacoma?
No, it's Tacoma.
Okay, Tacoma City.
If you live in Tacoma and you're a registered voter,
right,
and you see somebody wandering around saying, "Are you a Tacoma voter?" And are you interested in tenants' rights? Please sign the petition to help us get it on the ballot. This is about down to the wire. We've got over 7,000 signatures so far.
But how many do you need?
We need about 7,000 valid signatures.
Okay.
So we're going for over in case they kick out any.
Sure. Well, they're going to have to cross off all the times I signed the petition because I don't live in...
Well, the city of Tacoma is apparently concerned enough about it that they're coming up with an alternate petition that will be very watered down.
The city is coming up with this?
Yes, so they're taking this seriously. They know about it. They know we're going to get enough signatures, and they're trying to confuse future voters.
It's like they did with the minimum wage. We were probably going to get 15 an hour, and they did another.
They
plan.
Knew that we well, had enough people, and that. So they put up another petition to divert
which
people.
Which went through.
That's reactionary
as hell. $12.50.
Yeah, well, that's what they do.
Yeah, well, that's we got to stop that.
Yeah.
Well, just like the city with the TAM workers too.
Yeah.
Well, before I forget, and I know this is out of sequence, but I did get a message from a fellow worker in Bellingham. And that message was that the Bellingham REI outfit has voted to unionize. It was something like 41 to 12.
Wow. The vote.
So I know a fellow worker, Noah, might want to hear this because of his employment.
No, it's not the warehouse. That's the actual retail shop.
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, he said REI Bellingham. And that's a big place for REI because, you know, they have Mount Baker expeditions and mm-hmm. lots of national and state parks up there. So that's pretty important. And even though they're not IWW, there are fellow workers, and we support them. And so I'm spreading the word for the Bellingham comrades.
Good. For those of you that have been, this is a whole little section under local events. So that's what you're listening to. I should have announced that. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, another local event. Those of you who have been watching the progress of Teresa Evans, the woman that was hit by the truck up on the overpass by the Tacoma Dome in, I think it was January of 2021. Anyhow, about 18 months ago. That case finally went to court. They had to extradite the guy from Oregon and bring him up here because he fled.
Yeah.
And there was a jury of 12 that were all white, mostly male. I was called as a witness, so I did get to be part of it. And the final verdict was kind of shocking, or maybe not. He was not found guilty of attempted murder. He was basically charged with hit and run. And he gets 6 to 9 months. That's all.
Is he liable for the medical expenses of the victim? Is he going to be held accountable?
That would be a civil lawsuit.
Well, it would. This decision, since he was convicted of something, you know, I don't even know if that's a felony. It should be a felony. Mm-hmm. But even then, you know, the victim is what I'm thinking about.
Right.
The woman's going to have to face years of rehab. For those in the listening audience who have had serious accidents, mm-hmm. All of us at this table have had serious mm-hmm. accidents that required hospitalization. It takes a long time to recover. And, you know, if your medical insurance starts playing footsie with you, you know, you can be screwed to the deck for lots and lots of money. And it's unfair. And I hope that she recovers completely. Shout out to fellow worker Teresa Evans.
Right. Well, I think she's contemplating a civil suit at this point.
Well, they had to go find this guy.
Yeah, he fled to Oregon.
Yeah.
That should have been a penalty right there.
Yeah, he fled.
6 to 9 months is a slap on the wrist.
It's
disrespectful.
And it was deliberate, in your opinion, and from what I could see.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tactic on the far right now. Mm-hmm. You know, Heather Heyer got killed by some Nazi right. Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, this is a tactic that these cowards are using. Using a big, you know, Dodge Ram pickup truck to run somebody over because they disagree with their politics. So this is heinous, and I hope she goes through with it. And I'd be willing to support that kind of campaign mm-hmm. with donations or whatever, but I hope she gets justice.
So, fellow workers, what else have you got to say about coming events?
Right now, we're going to have another... Wobbly Movie Night up in Bremerton, and it's going to be in late August. I haven't nailed down the date yet because we're still wondering about the rights to the movie and everything. But please, I will keep the radio show informed, and I'll keep the Facebook page informed, which is something I never thought of before. Gee whiz. Just, you know, I could list Kitsap events on...
You certainly can.
Until we get our own, you know, high-powered organization going.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're having another Wobbly Movie Night, and we attend various zine fairs and tablings and stuff. Our outfit, due to fellow worker Miguel working hard on this, got a table at the Seattle Anarchist Book Fair.
When is that?
I don't know.
December last year.
Okay, I think it might be, but... from that fellow worker's hard work, mm-hmm. we got a table, and I'm looking forward to participating.
That's really fun.
Is it? I've never been to one.
Oh, so fun.
Well, we need to get the word out, and we're respected at events like that. So
yeah. Oh, and Al gets really involved.
Yeah,
that's
well,
his thing.
Yeah.
Books and Al. Okay. Well, where to hear the show? You can hear the show on KTAH 101.9 FM. You can hear it. That's Radio Tacoma. You can hear it on KTQA 95.3 FM. You can hear it on KZAKX 94.9 Bellingham FM. And you can hear it online at radiotacoma.org. And if you are listening to it online, feel free to contact us if your city or your area would like to carry it. We would love to come to wherever you are. And solidarity to you all.
Solidarity forever.
Solidarity forever.